The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
And welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Kay Marie in the studio with Shaka Hislop and Ali Moreno tonight. And we've also got Gemma Soler and James Ollie with us because we are going to start by talking about Chelsea and Barcelona, the two clubs seemingly linked all summer when it comes to the transfer window. And James Ollie, our FC London correspondent. This is also going to continue because we're now hearing that Chelsea are linked with Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. What more can you tell us?
Yeah, so as we know, there are a number of transfers being discussed between Chelsea and Barcelona. A number of players could move in either direction. And my understanding is that one of those players that's been discussed is Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. Now, Chelsea at the moment are heading into a new Premier League season with Kai Havertz as their main centre-forward. He has played there. It is a role that he has performed proficiently both before his time at Chelsea and while he's been at the club. But the club let Romelu Lukaku go back to Inter Milan on loan on the basis that they were going to get another forward in this window. That search, my understanding has, that it's stepped up in the last few days. And Aubameyang is a name that has now emerged. I think it's significant that when you think about the reshuffle at Chelsea this summer following the takeover of the club, the departure of Marina Granovskaya and of Petr Cech, Tuchel's taken on a more important role in terms of identifying players. And with Aubameyang, he's got a fantastic relationship. The pair had 2 years together at Borussia Dortmund, and he's spoken glowingly about him ever since their time together in Germany. And it is my understanding that he is a player that does interest Tuchel and thinks he could do a job, as we all know, as we've seen him do in the Premier League for Arsenal. He thinks that he could fill that gap, even though he's 33 years old.
So, Gemma, what's Barcelona's position on this?
Well, let's start for the player's position. He doesn't want to go. The coach position, Xavi doesn't want Aubameyang to go. Why? If he has such an overbooking in the forward line, because we don't know about Ansu Fati fitness, and we don't know about Memphis Depay future, and he's not counting on Braithwaite. But saying that, the player doesn't want to go, the coach doesn't want him to go, but what is the club thinking? Well, you know, they are under pressure to raise funds in order to register their new players. In La Liga, they already signed a forward duo, Rafinha and Lewandowski, and it would be such a good operation, money-related, because he costed nothing, and they can take profit, and this profit would be good for balancing the books. And there's another thing, is that this second season, his salary is increasing substantially. So saying that, the actors, they don't want this move, but the club, the financial part of the club, they might be interested in Aubameyang making this move to Chelsea.
Ale, you're Aubameyang. You know that Lewandowski's come in. You know that Chelsea needs someone to go and score the goals for them. What are you going to do? Are you going to go to Chelsea or are you going to fight for your place at Barcelona?
When is the next flight to Chelsea? When do I leave Barcelona for London? And while the line for him to get into a position where he can play is led by Lewandowski, and it's only one player that he would be competing against, is perhaps Barcelona's most important player coming into the season. You make the investment to go get Lewandowski, he's going to be the focal point. And so while it may just be one player and you're just one injury away, if that injury doesn't happen, you're not going to play. And if indeed you play, you'll play on the outside. And then when you go and stand in those lines on the outside, then you have to stand behind Dembele and Rafinha and Ansu Fati, and it gets crowded, and now you don't have a place in the team. So if you're Aubameyang and you seem to have a direct path to actually getting on the field and playing a critical role in a team's success and a team at the level of Chelsea, I think you take that path and you say, thank you, Barcelona. It was a great time. You've chosen Lewandowski. I'm out. See you all later.
Do you agree with that, Shaka?
I do, but here's a challenge from
from the players and the players' mentality, especially those players who came in January, like Aubameyang. They joined the club at a time when Barcelona were, in relative terms, were struggling, where they were trying to find that identity under Xavi. They were trailing both Real Madrid and Sevilla by a long way. And you take that gamble to come into the club. And it worked out in Barcelona finishing second, Champions League football to come. And then you see, and I'm sure we'll discuss the finances and how Barcelona are able to do all of this, but that aside, you see the arrivals coming in, and now prospects look so much better in August than they did in December and January. And you want to be a part of that. The issue is, and Ali's right to point out, that Aubameyang is, while it's a very short list as to who plays centre-forward, you couldn't ask to be behind somebody more prominent than Robert Lewandowski in that position. And while Aubameyang can drift either side, again, you look down both wings, you don't feel that Aubameyang is preferred as a winger either. So what is his option? And that's the challenge. Do you want to stay at Barcelona and be a part of the project, be a part of the prospect that is to come, knowing that you may spend more time on the sidelines than on the pitch? Or do you go to Chelsea, where you have that chance of playing, of being part of a Thomas Tuchel side and a Chelsea team that are competing in Champions League as well, and have their sides set equally high?
Gemma, could letting Aubameyang go to Chelsea help Barca out with their finances? Is it true that they are still hoping to get rid of some players to register new ones?
Well, now they are not able to register the players they have signed. There is like a 100 million gap between what Barcelona understands that they are revenues for these economical operations they have been doing, and what La Liga understands. We still don't know the number because La Liga is still working on the numbers on the book, but we've been told it would be about that. So Barcelona are working in the fourth, as Joan Laporta tells, Palanca, these economical layers, they will be needing to sell in the next few days 24.5% of Barça Studios that will bring money, and they think that with that they will be plus the getting rid of some players, they will be able to register them all. The plan is to have all them, Lewandowski, Rafinha, even Dembélé, because he's like a new signing for the La Liga opening. That's what they are working on. That so Joan Laporta, what he's saying is that if this difference is that big, they will pull this other palanca. It could be a fifth economical layer in the future, that the members approve that it's the sale of the half of the merchandising company, BLS. So they will do whatever. They are taking a huge risk. It's like taking a mortgage, but thinking that they need to make this team stronger in order to have more revenues in tickets and more success. And it's their economically the way they think they can make success and more money.
Well, one player they're not going to have to make any room for, even though he had been rumoured to be on his way out, James, is Cesar Azpilicueta. He's sticking around at Chelsea now. He signed a new deal.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, this, because it's been rumbling on for months, really. And Azpilicueta, on the one hand, is a loyal servant to Chelsea, decade at the club. He's won every single trophy there is, really important figure in the dressing room, even if he doesn't necessarily start every single week anymore. And Tuchel was quite clear at the end of last season that he really wanted Azpilicueta to stay. Behind the scenes, Azpi pushed quite hard, I think, for a move to Barcelona. But I think the new owners have had an impact here. I think Todd Bowley was quite decisive about wanting to keep Azpilicueta at the club. And I think it also, because of the upheaval they've had with obviously the change of owner, but also in the dressing room, we think about Rudiger and Christensen in particular leaving. The idea of losing Azpilicueta as well, such a key player behind the scenes in keeping that stability, keeping that continuity, maintaining the standards that Chelsea have set for so many years under Abramovich. I think to lose him as well would have been a bigger impact off the field than maybe on it. We know he's 32. Reece James has come through in that position. He could play on the right side of a back three, but he wouldn't really be your first choice necessarily in those big games anymore. But I think to lose him as well as the other two would have been a big blow. So really, they've lost a lot of players to Barcelona this summer. So I think, you know, at least they can chalk one up for Chelsea on this front.
Chelsea done well to keep him there, Ale Aspilicueta, especially what James is saying, what you bring to a dressing room as well and those leadership skills too.
Yeah, and I think there's an importance to that people may not realize, in that you need players that are glues within a locker room, that keep not only everything together, but keep things moving in the right direction. Because a team with high expectations, there are going to be moments in which things are not going your way. And the tendency in a locker room that is not together is to get fractured. So that's when players like Aspilicueta can come in and bring the group, be inclusive players rather than exclusive players. Bring everybody in and keep everybody in a path where they're all working together towards a common goal. And Chelsea, again, with high expectations, there's going to be a lot of attention. If they don't deliver on those expectations, there may just be a tendency for this team to take a step back. A player like Aspilicueta can keep that from happening, not on the field, not so much on the field as he did earlier in his career, as off the field. And I think that's an important role that he must have.
James, is there any sense of panic setting in at Chelsea? The fact that they are keeping hold of Aspilicueta, that they are trying to keep hold of the players that they have got?
I think there's certainly, I wouldn't say necessarily panic, but it's certainly getting more active very quickly. I'll tell you a very quick story. It probably explains it quite well. There's a player who moved to another Premier League club, and that deal took a while this summer. And at the back end of that, when a deal had virtually been agreed, well, it had been agreed between the player and the club, but the clubs were still thrashing out the fee. The agent involved got a call from Todd Bowley out of nowhere and said, and Todd said to him, right, what's the situation? What's the asking price? What does the player want? The agent told him and Todd said, OK, yeah, we can do that. Now I know the numbers. Let me go back and have a conversation. And the agent was thinking, well, hang on a minute. We've now got Chelsea involved out of nowhere. This could change the whole dynamic of everything. The agent never received another phone call. And I think that is a story, or a version of that story, is being replicated by I've heard that a version of that from a few other people around the place at the moment, that I think Chelsea, particularly defensively, but they've missed out on several players. You think about De Ligt, you think about Koundé, who's gone to Barcelona. You know, there are players that they would like to have had in, have had a pre-season, and they're now looking at, you know, what are we, 24 hours before the start of the Premier League season, and that back line is looking pretty uncertain. Koulibaly is obviously one player who could come into strengthen it. But you think about the Cucurella deal, that's kind of come almost out of nowhere. I think everybody thought he was going to Manchester City. The player certainly did. He handed in a transfer request at Brighton thinking that would help force a move and lower the asking price. Chelsea then come in, very similar to that story I said, I just told you, that Chelsea came in and said, right, what do you want? Okay, let's do it. There's a slight issue over whether a player is going to go the other way, but in terms of the actual fee, they were very quick in agreeing that because Chelsea paid what Brighton wanted. And I think we might see that in one or two other deals before the end of the window. Another big one is Wesley Fofana. We understand that a big offer could be going in there in the next 24, 48 hours. That Leicester value that player at £80 million. That's the price that they sold Harry Maguire for. 21-year-old centre-back, very talented. But that is a huge amount of money. My understanding is that it's not putting Chelsea off. And although there's another situation going on with Leicester in terms of their next accounts are going to show a big loss, they need to sell players, but they don't want to lose players on the cheap. They certainly don't want to lose Fofana, who had such a great season and has signed a big contract in March. I think he's contracted to 2027. So they hold a lot of the aces in that particular situation. But financially, they are under pressure. They are going to have to sell someone, probably multiple players, before the end of the window. So there's a chess match going on. But you can certainly tell from the mood music around Chelsea and speaking to intermediaries that they are starting to get quite edgy about the state of the squad with the Premier League kicking off.
What do you think about Tuchel now? Is he going to be at least a bit happier with the players that are coming in than he was after that Arsenal friendly when he said he couldn't guarantee that his team were going to be ready for the start of the Premier League?
Yeah, I mean, he's cut quite a morose figure during the whole of pre-season, really, because he knew that they were fighting behind from the start. The sanctions imposed by the UK government on the club while the sale of the club took place meant that they couldn't talk to new signings, they couldn't renegotiate existing player contracts. And that was a significant factor in losing Rudiger and Christensen in particular, but also it meant that they're fighting from behind in the window. Clearly, they then lost Granovskaya, they lost Petacek. Todd Bowley's come in and, you know, Bowley's got great sporting experience, but he's not a sporting director by trade. He's having to learn as he goes with a lot of these situations. I think Tuchel will be a little bit more relaxed, but he would much rather have had a settled picture. If you think about, you know, the business that some of the other clubs have done, City got their main signing in early in Haaland, Liverpool got Darwin Nunez in fairly early. They obviously had Luis Diaz in from January, who's going to, you know, have 6 months with the team, working with them and understanding what he needs to do to help replace Sadio Mane. Those two are the target for Chelsea, and they look not only they're ahead of them last season, but they also have had the advantage of a really settled pre-season, getting those players in early. It looks a very tall order as things stand for Chelsea to try and close that gap to the top two, and that's what will be worrying Tuchel the most.
I gotta love the fact a manager, and he's not the first one nor the last one to do this in the case of Thomas Tuchel, that loses a pre-season game, doesn't look good doing it, and now we're talking already forecasting and making the excuse as to, hey, look, we may not be ready for the beginning of the season. Hold on. Whose job is it to get this team ready for the first game of the season? It's his job. It's nobody else's job. Don't tell me about the guys that you don't have. Don't tell me about the guys that you want. Work with what you have and make the best of it. How about you just do your job? I don't know. Am I asking for much? Maybe. It's too much what I'm asking for, apparently.
Okay, well, I've got something else to ask now. We're going to switch it back to Barcelona, Gemma. It's Ricky Pudge. He's going to LA Galaxy. Can you tell us more about this? It has come as a surprise to some.
Well, moving to the U.S. probably because he was one of the most exciting prospects of La Masia a few years ago, but he's one of the biggest disappointments in this last year, talking about young players created in the Barcelona's academy, because he's a brilliant, talented player, but he hasn't been able to fit in any Barcelona team under any coach, because he didn't play with Luis Enrique, he didn't play with Ernesto Valverde, either Quique Setién, and not now with Xavi, a coach that apparently he's also created in Barcelona's academy, but there's something with this player. The coaches really doesn't trust him, his physicality. There's a problem also with the way of training. As some of them, they also talk about the attitude he was showing, especially when he was in Barça B, in the second team, like comparing to Ansu Fati when he was with the first team for the first time. He was a humble player, taking this low attitude, trying not to be in the center of the focus and in the media, and Ricky Puig had a completely different attitude. All these things, because he was a talented player, as I said, and he's like the perfect marketing player that would succeed in Barcelona. He's Catalan, he's good looking, he's from a good family. He's got this Barcelona DNA, but there was something that wouldn't help him be successful. And it's difficult that when a coach is his coach, be that sincere. But I had the chance to talk with the former Barcelona player, one-to-one. And of course I asked, and there's something with the attitude of this player that didn't make him succeed. He's still a young player. He's still very talented. So we'll see. He was apparently saying that he was having offers in Europe, and we were kind of surprised with the destination, but not that he is leaving, because there was no such patience, because it's been 5 years of this academy player that he hasn't been in the stars. He wasn't barely playing under Xavi, and there has been a lot of patience with Ricky Puig compared to other young players.
Did it come as a surprise to you, LA?
Yes, it did, because of all the things that Gemma just mentioned in terms of what this player could have been for Barcelona and what Barcelona would be able to sell in terms of, we're still producing top-class players in La Masia. and this is one of our players. So he would have been given every opportunity. And to be honest with you, under Quique Setién, towards the end of that season, there were moments in which I looked at Ricky Puig and thought, he looks like a difference maker. He looks like this is a guy that can be something for Barcelona. Then Ronald Koeman came around. He took the same look that I did, and he said, no, this guy's not going to play for me. And that felt like the death nail there for Ricky Puig. And he was not going to get a chance under Ronald Koeman. And then I thought, well, Xavi coming around maybe, just maybe, changes sort of the outlook for the player. And he too said, no, not for me. So I have to trust the managers that are working with him on a daily basis and not my perception that I see every once in a while when he plays. When I say, he's got something. This kid's got something. These guys are working with him every day and they're saying, he doesn't have anything for us. He's got to go.
We cannot finish this segment where we're linking Chelsea and Barcelona, as we have seen all summer, without talking, James, about the Frankie de Jong deal. Could Chelsea really hijack Manchester United's attempts to get this player?
I think there's a possibility they might, yeah. The situation at Chelsea with their midfield is actually quite comparable to where they were with their defenders 12 months earlier. Jorginho and N'Golo Kante have both got a year left on their contracts. It is a concern of Thomas Tuchel's in particular that he may be left very short next summer in the same way that he's been left defensively short this summer. Look, I mean, De Jong is I think he's a fantastic player. I think if he goes to United or Chelsea, I think he's a game changer for either. I think he's that good. I don't think anybody needs really convincing of his quality. It's a case of whether they can convince Barcelona to sell and whether they can get over this impasse of this £17 million that he's owed in wages from Barcelona, which is obviously a big part of the issue with him going to Manchester United. Again, we've heard rumours. Certainly my understanding is that De Jong would rather stay in Barcelona, but if he has to go anywhere, I think he'd probably prefer Chelsea and London over Manchester United. But there is, as it stands, no offer on the table from Chelsea. I think this is another situation where they're weighing up whether they're going to go in, and if they're going to go in, they're going to go in hard, as they have done with so many of the other players, some of whom they've got and some of whom they haven't this summer.
What's been the talk about this whole situation right now, Gemma, with Frankie de Jong at Barcelona?
Yeah, Kate, my understanding is the same. He's more keen on going to Chelsea than Man United because it's a Champions League team, and because apparently they would have guaranteed that he will have the same big salary as he's having right now in Barcelona. But his first choice, what he really wants to do is to stay in Barcelona and not to take a pay cut, which is something not compatible to stay in Barcelona. And what he's explaining to Barcelona is, listen, guys, you came in 2019 when half European teams wanted me. I decided to go to Barcelona, and I have been navigating in projects with no future and trying to succeed in teams that they were not exciting at all. Now there is a project, an exciting project. There is a coach. I want to play here and I want to succeed here. So this is Frankie de Jong's position. While Barcelona, as we were mentioning, that they need to get rid of a big salary like this one. They need to sell in order to register all the players they have already agreed, and not having to take more mortgages that could compromise the club's future.
Well, we'd like to thank Gemma and James for being with us. And if you'd like to know a lot more about which players are deciding on whether it's Chelsea or Barcelona, you should head on over to our Transfer Talk page on the website. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com. Ali Moreno's Premier League prediction.
Wait a minute.
Shaka was going to stay at home today, and then he heard it was going to be your picks, and he decided to come in.
Wait a minute.
So would you like to talk us through these, Ali? You've got City and Liverpool as your winner and runner-up.
Okay.
You've got Chelsea fourth.
I'd like to talk about the picture. Can we talk about the picture instead?
Yeah, let's talk about that.
I mean, let's talk about that picture. Is that you?
That is it. Yes. That is me, and I know exactly where that's from. That was during the 2001/2002 MLS draft. Oh, that's what I was wearing at the draft at the time.
Okay, all right.
I was styling, baby.
Well, okay.
It was some style.
So,
something's going to change.
Let's not avoid the question after all the talk we've just had. You've got Chelsea in the top four.
Yes, I do.
All right.
I'm a believer. They're going to take a step back, but not far enough to get out of the top four. And Spurs will take a step up. Now, I say this knowing full well that my relationship with Spurs fans has been
kind of like a dress sense back in the day.
Yes, eclectic. Well,
an acquired taste.
Yes.
Let's call it that.
Yes. Well, I just think Spurs, I think, have done a really good job of addressing team needs. And Chelsea, while they've done an okay job of addressing team needs, there are still concerns out there. We just talked about those concerns. So they'll take a step back, but not far enough to drop out of the top four. And I just don't think that Manchester United will threaten for a top four. And Arsenal, while I was tempted, I just didn't think that they were going to be better than Chelsea.
Shaka's not a believer in Chelsea this season.
Not as much as a believer as Ali, quite clearly. I just think Chelsea's summer has been a little bit of a scattergun approach.
Wait a second. My taste was eclectic.
Let's disregard. Huh? Let's disregard the styling.
What is this stance that you're taking here?
I'm either walking to the bench stance or
I was just
I'm a little bored.
Wondering how do I end up in this odd looking outfit? That's what that face is all about.
Will I put Chelsea fifth in years to come in my Premier League predictions?
Nothing about that even matches, does it? Nothing about that. Oh, God.
How about what? The outfit?
The outfit.
Okay.
Yeah, never mind the picks. For me, back to the picks. I just think I'm with Ali on Manchester United. They finished sixth. And then it really does come down to Spurs, Arsenal, Chelsea. I like the business that Arsenal did. Chelsea's still a little bit scattergun approach this summer. That may come right over the next few weeks. But as we sit right now, I just feel Arsenal are better positioned than Chelsea.
So you're not impressed with what we've just heard from James Ollie on some of those transfers and the targets that they have?
But James Ollie, he confirmed a lot of what I'm saying, that Chelsea just call you up and say, what do you want? Okay. And then you might hear back and then all of a sudden the phone gets cut and they don't call you back. And that just that sums up Chelsea's approach, that it seems as though whenever they hear somebody else is interested in a player, they all of a sudden get themselves or force themselves in line. And it's less about what they need and their targets and more about hijacking other people's deals.
Can I just tell you that I think that picture, the image that you have there is the starting goalkeeper was warming up. Right?
No.
The starting goalkeeper was warming up. You, as the backup, were standing to the side, and your role at that point was to hit those sort of driven balls into the box as the guy comes out and gets it.
You get all that from that picture?
Yes, that's because you were comfortably waiting for him to get ready as he was stretching.
I was just enjoying the scenery.
Yeah, exactly.
The game was up the other end. That's all.
I'm saying.
So
that's all.
You disagree on that, but you actually both agree on Manchester United not making it into the top four. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the opening day of the season, because Anthony Martial is injured and he's not going to be able to play in the game against Brighton. It's a hamstring injury. Reports state right now it's not expected to be too serious. But perhaps Ronaldo, who left a game early the other day.
And that's unacceptable.
Which is unacceptable and not condoned at all by new manager Erik ten Hag. Perhaps he's going to have to be called upon for this game. It would suggest that, wouldn't it?
Yes. And this is a big test for ten Hag. Not in terms of selecting Ronaldo, not in terms of getting a return out of him this season. If Ronaldo stays, he is going to score. But more in how he handles this week, how he handles the build-up to the game with that dressing room. Because as we've said time and time again, players are looking for the first sign of weakness and they will exploit. And Ronaldo puts him in an awkward position. We don't know how he's handled it behind closed doors. But how he does or doesn't, as the case may be very telling on the rest of the season with the rest of that dressing room.
All right, so do you play?
If I have no choice, absolutely yes.
Okay, well,
you alluded to what Erik ten Hag said. Let's just remind our viewers what Erik ten Hag said about players leaving the game before the final whistle. This is unacceptable. I tell them this, that's unacceptable. We are a team, we are a squad. You have to stay until the end. The whole situation, we were talking about it yesterday as well, Ali, where it seemed the club were saying one thing at the start, like, you know, everything's fine here. And then the manager's coming out and saying this already from the start of the season. It's a bit strange to not have the club backing the manager on this one.
The whole situation, it's only an example of what this is going to be throughout the course of the season until they figure out what the role of Cristiano Ronaldo is on the Ten Hag.
Until they have clarity on that, everything else is going to be difficult for Ten Hag, because there is the big shadow of Ronaldo, and that's not going to go away. If Ronaldo stays, and he's right there, that's Cristiano Ronaldo. And whatever he does, whatever he says, however he says it, whatever gesture he makes with his arms, guess what? Ten Hag is going to be under pressure. Because the moment that Ronaldo says something, the moment that Ronaldo makes a face, the moment that Ronaldo comes off the field, all of those things we're going to pay attention to, and it's going to become a topic of conversation. We knew this was going to happen. It's going to continue to happen, and it will not go away, because we have no clarity as to what the role is of Cristiano Ronaldo with Manchester United and as to what the role is with Ten Hag right now, in the present, for Manchester United. We know he's the manager. We know he's making decisions. But as long as Cristiano Ronaldo is there, that's one decision that he's going to have to make every single day. And every single day, he's going to have to answer the same question about Cristiano Ronaldo.
I totally agree with you, Ali. But here's the thing. We should know what is Ten Hag's role within that club. We should know what is Ronaldo's role within that club, especially as it pertains to Erik ten Hag. And the club, and albeit Ten Hag did not do an interview after that, after the game on was it Sunday or Monday, whatever it was, the club took this position of making a statement that appeased Ronaldo, which I do not understand. So their first order of business, in the absence of Ten Hag making a statement, was to appease a player who asked any footballer about that situation, and you know you stay till the very end. Regardless, that is just par for the course. But the club decided to make a statement to underplay the entire situation. And then Ten Hag found himself in this awkward position where he now has to come out and contradict the club and make it into an even bigger issue than it already was. And that, for me, is the most unacceptable thing to this. That the club, in their softly approach, in their need to appease a player of Ronaldo's stature, and I know what he means to that club, I know what he means to world football, but your manager is the first port of call. You are indebted to him primarily, not a player. And as a result, we have this awkward mixing of, well, who's saying what, who's contradicting who, who's really pulling all these strings behind the scenes.
Here's the thing. You cannot, as a club, you cannot have it both ways. You can't scratch Ronaldo's back and say, everything's going to be okay, Cristiano. We cool. We good. We're going to be all right. And then the manager who just said, no, this is not cool. No, this is not right. No, you cannot do that. You can then go and support the manager as well. And if indeed you're building into the future, and this is what Manchester United apparently are trying to do, then the manager is the one that is going to be there longer than the guy who apparently has asked to leave. And so this is where we are if you're Manchester United. You try to appease a player, you scratch his back, we're all right, Cristiano, because you need his goals. But then, hey, Ten Hag, Eric, we good, baby? You're the future of this club. You can't have it both ways. And when you're trying to make sure that you're taking care of both, you're taking care of nobody.
You know who can have it both ways tonight, though? Our viewers, with your tweets, because we have Ale and Xhaka answering them tonight on Extra Time. Make sure to go over to our YouTube page to always stay up to date with every edition of Extra Time.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Bundesliga season kicks off tomorrow. It's Eintracht Frankfurt taking on defending champions Bayern Munich. We will have all the coverage for you here on ESPN. Make sure you join us for all the build-up, because also on the coverage with us, we have Archie Rintut and Arne Friedrich from Frankfurt, which is exactly where they are right now. Where exactly are you, though, Archie? Because that looks familiar to me.
You might recognize it, Kay, from Eintracht Frankfurt's Europa League winning celebrations in the summer, when there were thousands of people standing where Anna and I are now, and red flares. I was on a balcony filming it. It was one of the most surreal experiences, and it's part of why, Anna, they are the most exciting team to be supporting in German football right now. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. I really like the fans of Frankfurt. They're amazing. Frankfurt won a fantastic title last year. I mean, the last team who won the EuroLeague was in 1997. It's been a while. Frankfurt did a fantastic job, and I think they earned it to be here.
This is where the town hall is, so it's quite an important place in Frankfurt. The German women's team was actually here on Monday to come back and celebrate their second place finish at the Euros. That's not a position that Bayern Munich are particularly familiar with right now. Their 10th consecutive Bundesliga title last season, and a bit of a stern test for Eintracht to open up with this time. How do you see Bayern right now? What did you make of their performance against RB Leipzig in the Super Cup last week?
To me, Bayern Munich, it's not a surprise, is the strongest team in the league. They signed some very good players. Obviously, they lost Lewandowski. He's going to leave a gap for sure. He scored on average 30 goals a year. But on the other hand, there is so much more time and space for other players to take on the responsibility. They signed great players in the defense, but also in the offense. And to me, it's the number one team in the league, and it stays like that for sure.
Matthijs de Ligt, Sadio Mane, the headline star signing this summer, Nusser Masraoui, Daley Gravenberch. Who would you pick out from just those that I've named there so far? Who do you like?
I mean, Archie, I'm a centre-back, or a former centre-back, so I definitely pick De Ligt. Nevertheless, Mane is not a bad signing either. But to me, the really important thing for Bayern Munich is to stabilise the defence. They were lacking kind of a leader in the back after Boateng and Alaba leaving. And to me, it's still a search for the final piece of the puzzle. And to me, De Ligt is the perfect person to come in. He's still young. He's a leader, despite of his young age. He played with the best center backs in the world in Juventus, and now he can bring in all the experiences that he've made to strengthen Bayern Munich.
Bayern coach Julian Nagelsmann said last week that De Ligt wasn't quite ready, hadn't quite had enough training to be ready for the game against RB Leipzig. We'll see if he does make the starting lineup against Eintracht Frankfurt, who have a former Bayern Munich player and a former World Cup winner, no less, World Cup winning final goal scorer, Mario Götze. He's back in the Bundesliga. This is very exciting, Arne.
I'm really excited about Mario seeing back in the Bundesliga. Obviously, after scoring the final goal in the World Cup, there was a lot of pressure on his shoulders, and he had some time to struggle with, and then he went to Holland. I think it was a very smart move for him to just like get off the, you know, the attention, to just like rehabilitate. And to me, honestly, when I looked at the game, he looked very lean. He looked very fit as well. And to me, he's definitely a fantastic signing for Frankfurt. And he's a player who's always trying to get into the pockets between the defensive line and the midfield. And he's going to be very, very important for Frankfurt this season.
Where do we see our top four for this season? Because I think we both have Eintracht Frankfurt in the mix. Where are you placing them, and what's your final top four? Tell us more.
So Frankfurt, I would put Frankfurt on number five, just like because they play Champions League and they have to cover a lot of games, which is not easy for teams who just like start to play in the Champions League for the first time or after a while. Bayern Munich is number one. I mentioned it earlier, so there's no doubt about that. Then to me, it's Borussia Dortmund. Even though they lost Haaland, they did some really, really good signings too. And there's a lot of euphoria. There's Edin Terzic, the new coach, and he wants to bring back the fans and wants to connect the fans with the team. Number three to me is Leipzig. They were able to keep the squad and also did some good signings with Raum and also Schlager. And Kunku stays, which is pretty important. Four probably in my eyes is Leverkusen, always talented, but they lack the final punch, I would call it this way, so the winner mentality. And Frankfurt to me is a fantastic team, and I think if they would not play Champions League, they would be probably in the top four.
One of my favorite quotes of preseason, Kay, actually came at the weekend when David Raum, moved from Hoffenheim to RB Leipzig, said that he thought in the Bundesliga transfer window, he had been the most important signing. Not short of confidence is David Raum, it's fair to say. I think that Dortmund are lacking a little bit in the fullback areas. They wanted to sign David Raum. Maybe he would have helped them. I think he would have in a certain aspect. But I have Frankfurt above Leverkusen. We saw Leverkusen wobbling, more than a little wobble it was, losing at SV Elversberg in the first round of the DFB Cup last week. So I have Frankfurt, with their European experience from last year, just pipping by Leverkusen. Otherwise, Arne and I, even when it comes to what we had for dinner, are pretty much on the same page here, Kay.
Oh, that's interesting. I heard that you went all healthy and you had salmon today instead of pizza. While we've got Arne here, Archie, one thing that I did want to ask you, Arne, was I know you weren't too impressed last week when we were talking to you about Robert Lewandowski and his comments after he'd left Bayern, but then he returned and it seems that they're all friends again. What did you make of it all?
First of all, I think it's a good move. So he wants to leave in a good way. And to me, I mentioned earlier that it's not really polite to use media to talk about a situation. I mean, I haven't been there when they talk about his contractual situation, but still, I think it doesn't belong into the paper. Therefore, I liked that he got back. He talked to everyone, and I think now you can just like draw, and you know, it's a final chapter. He's now in Barcelona. Everyone is happy, and Bayern Munich can start all over.
And Lewandowski too. Nice to hear. And surely you guys are in agreement on that. We can't wait to hear more from both of you on the game tomorrow. That is Archie Rintoht and Anna Friedrich there in Frankfurt in the studio with me tomorrow as we do cover this game and the next game after that, which will be Borussia Dortmund taking on Leverkusen, is Ale Moreno. Ale, I just wanted to get your thoughts on how this new look Bayern Munich is looking to you.
Ah, well, after all the positive energy that I got from Arne and Archie and the healthy meal, I guess I should be positive as well. Look, I understand that Bayern Munich fans should be interested in the future of the club, and the present and the future, and that is Sadio Mane, and then the combination of all the moving parts of players that can really provide you with the possibility of scoring goals. Not the certainty, the possibility. And that's where perhaps my optimism kind of wavers a little bit. I know with certainty, because I've seen it, that Robert Lewandowski is going to score a bunch of goals for me. So as he walks out the door, yes, he's going to provide opportunities for everybody else. But those guys have to be able to rise up to that opportunity. Whatever this rotation is going to be, and it's going to be an important job for Julian Nagelsmann, he's going to have to be able to figure out, okay, what is the combination that is going to work best for us? And in this rotation of players, can I get productivity? They're going to get productivity in the Bundesliga. I'm not concerned as to what they're going to do against Wolfsburg. I'm not concerned as to what they're going to do against Hoffenheim. I'm more concerned as to what they're going to do in the top tier games. And that's where I think Bayern Munich has to be able to separate themselves. And when you had Robert Lewandowski, you had the certainty of goals. These other guys, they may score the goals, but we don't know that for sure.
Well, you can hear a lot more from Ale on this topic and many more when it comes to the Bundesliga and the two guys that you're seeing on your screen there, Archie Rintoht and Anna Friedrich. Tomorrow we will have full coverage of the opening day of the Bundesliga season. It is Eintracht Frankfurt taking on Bayern Munich. You can catch that game with us. And then on Saturday, we'll be on ABC and ESPN Plus for Borussia Dortmund against Bayer Leverkusen. What a game that is on the second day of the Bundesliga return. Make sure to be with us Saturday, 12 Eastern.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
That will do it for the latest edition of ESPN FC. Thank you so much for being with us. Stick around, though. These guys are going to be answering your tweets in extra time next. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. We have the dream team.
Yeah, we do.
Ale Moreno.
Who dreamt this up?
Ale Moreno and Shaka Hislop are here with me today. And I'm very happy to have them alongside. But just the two of them answering your questions. And the first question is for the two of you.
Okay.
All right. Actually, your present form today as well, because we saw some pictures of them earlier where they weren't really in their present form. They were a lot younger. Question for Ale and Shaka.
I'm sorry, was that a compliment?
It was not.
It didn't feel like a compliment.
Nope.
However you take it. Question for Ale and Shaka. Do you think the unnecessary headlines that Ronaldo brings for the club is one of the main reasons why other clubs across Europe have said no to him?
No, I think one of the main reasons is because of how much money he earns, and he's now, 37 years old?
Ask you a question. Why did you go serious all of a sudden?
No, because I don't understand what you had.
I know. I mean, we came into Extra Time all happy, jolly, the dream team, so on and so forth.
I'm a very focused individual.
And then she asked a question, and you went straight business.
I'm very focused. I'm very business.
Okay. All right, Dr. Hislop.
What have you got to say, Ale, about it?
No, I want to hear the answer. I'm sorry.
I'm done now.
I can't believe I interrupted you, Dr. Hislop.
Yes. Don't let it happen again.
I agree with you. It's the money. Or, as Shaka would say,
It's the money.
What was that?
Okay. No, you got serious.
goodness me.
Okay. Oh, God. Dr. Shaka.
Okay, it's the money. Don't encourage him, Kay.
It's the money.
Don't encourage him.
Rich team.
I hold you to a higher standard, Kay.
Dr. Shaka.
Don't drop to this level.
Which team will finish higher on the league table, Newcastle or West Ham?
What? I'm going Newcastle. Newcastle have had a good transfer window. Newcastle had a good second half of the last season as well.
And they are also giving you the freedom of the city, and so you're not going to upset them, right?
It's got nothing to do with it. I am still impartial.
We went back to
I'm still impartial.
He was insinuating that I was bought out.
Which you're not against. For the right price, I have some flexibility in my moral compass.
Not this time.
Ferrale, with all the signings that Barcelona have made so far, Do you see them closing the gap on Real Madrid this season?
Do you see them paying their wages?
Assuming that they're able to register all these players. It was funny in today's show that Gemma mentioned a fourth and a fifth lever. I mean, where are all these levers coming from? And who's pulling all these levers?
Yep. I want to go to my bank manager and say, Just give me a couple more levers. And we'll be good. You just wait.
Imagine showing up to your bank manager and saying, showing them a video of Gemma breaking it down and saying, you see what Barcelona did?
Yeah.
With millions upon millions upon millions of dollars. Do that for me.
That's right.
Because apparently, if you're broke, it's not a problem.
I'm broke, I can't pay my bills, but if you give me 50 million, you'll be good. Me and you will be good.
I can get 5 more Maserati.
I'll pull some more levers, and we'll be good. Oh, goodness me.
If you had the $50 million.
Wait, hold on. No. We pick up my Maserati.
I was going to ask you a serious question. Serious question, Shaq.
I hold you to a higher standard.
Yeah, serious question. Serious question. You get the $50 million from your bank manager, the Barcelona deal.
Yeah.
So do you go for the Maserati or the yacht?
I go for a one-way plane ticket to a non-extradition country.
Okay.
I've thought this out.
Oh, yeah.
I've given this a thought.
Who's chasing you, Chef?
I'm just saying. Next question, please.
I hope your bank manager isn't watching. Question for Ale. Do you agree with Jan that Bayern, I don't know why it's in inverted commas, had a better transfer window than Barca? Or did he do Bayern? Mm. Maybe. When Barca signed a Champions League winner, centre-back Christensen, Serie A winner Kessie, best striker in Lewandowski, starting right wing for Brazil in Rafinha, best centre-back in La Liga for past 2 seasons, Koundé. So do you agree that Bayern had a better transfer window than Barca?
No. But again, we're assuming that all of these players that you just mentioned are going to be able to play for Barcelona. And here's the tricky part about this answer. Right now, where we are, assuming that these guys play, I would say, yeah, Barcelona had a better transfer window. In 10 years' time, we don't know what the actual... What the actual result or consequences have been from this gamble that Barcelona has taken, the mortgaging of the future of the club. We'll know in a decade what they have been able to do or haven't been able to do because they essentially are going to be hamstrung but by their own investment. If in 10 years' time, Barcelona are in a place where financially they continue to make decisions, sound financial decisions, and they're in a stronger place than they are now, then yes, sure, they've had a great transfer window. But if they find themselves in financial upheaval again, and all these levers that they're pulling did not work, and they mortgage the future of the club, then I don't care what names you got in this transfer window, you cannot deem this as a success.
Let me ask this way. I think Bayern are short favorites to win the Bundesliga. We'll see where Barcelona finishes. Right now, as we said, and let's assume that those signings can somehow get them over the line. Who you think goes deeper in the Champions League?
Barcelona.
Yeah?
Did you see Bayern defending against Leipzig?
No, I'm just confirming.
No, I'm thinking Barcelona. If you get all
if
those
you get
guys,
all those of Eli.
Yeah. You get all those guys on the field, it changes the dynamic of the team and it changes the outlook of the team as well. I think that's a better team than Bayern Munich. That's currently constructed.
Right. And if everything goes to plan, okay. Ale and Shaka, is this the best transfer window in the history of MLS? Mm. Bale, Chiellini, Bernardeschi, Insigne, Cucho, Puig, Herrera, Fontas, etc., etc., etc.
I'll leave that to my learned comrade.
Well, it's been the most active and certainly with the most impressive names that I can remember. Once upon a time when it was 2006 and Beckham was coming into the league, it was a whole entire different reality for MLS back then. You know who else came to MLS in 2006?
Who could you be talking about? Who do you think, Shaka?
That was an impressive transfer
what
window.
What a transfer
right
window that was.
Yes.
Not overshadowed in any way.
No, you add to the the spectacle.
Very under the radar.
You have to take
well
it.
Under the radar.
You have to take it all together. We share equally in this transfer window business we do.
But I will say that there are a lot of good things happening in Major League Soccer now. What I would also say is that there's a whole lot of variety in this transfer window. And this would be my message to MLS in general, to the offices in Major League Soccer in New York City, and say to them, don't marry yourself and tie yourself to any particular idea as to what you think the perception of the league should be elsewhere. They're so concerned about being deemed and defined as a retirement league that they're sort of run away from the older big name players coming to MLS. Don't embrace it. That can be part of your league. It can also be the young player that did not get an opportunity in Barcelona or for whatever reason didn't quite work out in Barcelona and now makes a choice to come to your league in Ricky Puig. That can also be your place in the world. It can be the young South American player who's struggling to get paid on a weekly basis in whatever the league may be because of the financial instability of the country that he plays in and chooses to come to MLS because he knows he has a structure, infrastructure, organization, and paid on time that he did not have in South America and now can use this league as a stepping stone to go somewhere else. That can be your place too. Don't marry yourself to a rhetoric and don't run away from a rhetoric. Embrace it all and become a major player in the world. That's what I would say to them.
I like that.
If I've ever heard a football political speech
thank you.
Delivered on ESPN FC.
Thank you.
Vote for me.
Thank you.
It did have that feeling, didn't it?
It did, right?
Embrace it all.
But I like
that. My name is Ali Moreno, and I endorse this message.
Yes, I do.
Or whoever it is, they
say. As Shaka would say, thank you.
I don't know what you're talking about.
This was a party political world cast by Ali Moreno. Right. For Shaka. Football rules keep updating, but they are often either in favour of attacking players or defenders.
Mm-hmm.
As a former goalkeeper, what rule do you wish FIFA to implement that favours goalkeepers as well?
I have absolutely no idea.
Okay.
I ain't give this any thought.
Bring the goalposts in.
Yeah. Maybe go post this big right there. I don't know. And listen, I understand why rule changes are as they are. It keeps the game attractive, they want more goals, that's what people are there for. I don't know what rule change I would implement.
I would. May I?
Sure. Since you're on a roll.
Well, this too is a message.
What would be your stance on this?
What I would say is that you have to monitor very closely the ball and the quality of the ball. The movement of the ball nowadays, it's unnatural at times. And while there are some players that can give you that movement because of their talent, there are some other players that have no business in moving the ball the way they do. And it's sometimes the ball looks more like a volleyball than a soccer ball. So I would monitor the flight of the ball, the quality of the ball, and don't fall in love too much with the design and all this sort of sexy PowerPoint presentation. The bullet points that you can make and so as to, oh, look how it flies in the air, how aerodynamic it is, and all this nonsense. No. How about give me a, if I hit a ball straight let it go straight. If I have, if I put some bend on it, then put some bend on it. If I'm good enough to do a little dip, then put it on me as a player. But this ball at times gets out of control.
I feel like Senator Moreno should stand on the table and give us the old dead.
That was a very good point, Ali.
Great. Yeah. And you agree?
I'm voting for Ali.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right, Ali, there's more.
Oh, goodness wow. me.
Ali. Ooh. What do you make of the League's Cup? I feel, you know what I feel like here? You know the moderator.
Yeah, exactly.
Ale, what do you make of the League's Cup for 2023? Does MLS and Liga MX need each other in order for both leagues to grow, or will they eventually merge into one league since Liga MX is so popular?
Well, who's right in these the questions? US. Ali's campaign manager? Is there something in that title, Sally?
This may be the one in which I may lose some votes.
Oh, okay, let's see.
I think that both leagues benefit from each other. But I also do think that you have to hold some independence in your league and maintain some separation. I think MLS has a lot of attributes and a lot of assets and things that they can build upon that make them unique. So embrace that uniqueness and don't feel like you have to merge with Liga MX so that you can compete with Liga MX. No, about you do you. You take care of yourself and make sure that your product is as good as it can possibly be. And let Liga MX do whatever they need to do on their side. Now, when you come on together and play this tournament, so be it. You're both benefiting from it. But in terms of the day-to-day activities, Liga MX, you stay over there. MLS, you stay over here. I'll see you in the field when we compete. And then that's when we'll prove that we're better than you. I don't think it has to be a symbiotic relationship in order for both of them to grow, because it's not MLS's responsibility to have Liga MX grow and vice versa. So for me, I think they keep each other separately on a day-to-day basis, come together for the tournaments, make it the best they can possibly be. But I think on an individual basis, I think MLS just needs to take care of itself first.
Didn't lose any votes there.
I'm just...
I like politician Ali.
Thank you.
Get yourself out there and vote for Ali Moreno, your local polling station. ESPN FC president, candidate.
Wow.
Thanks so much for sending in your tweets.
I want free tickets. Well, when you win, I want tickets for all the games.
For MLS or Liga MX?
Both.
I'm keeping them separate.
Yeah, I want both. I'm here for the freebie.
All right, Bundesliga, Premier League, both of them kick off tomorrow. We will have it covered.
My country has extradition, though, Sean.
Yeah, we
will come after you.
Ask not what Moreno can do for you. Anyway, goodbye.
That's exactly what happened.